Live show is on in less than 1 minute.
Live! Live, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
So, my fellow Nazi appeasers, that son of a bitch. The nerve of the President of the United States, and I'm ashamed to call him that. I'm sorry I called him that. This man, this punk, this miserable, low-down human being goes to the Knesset and gives this outrageous speech of his today. Oh, I have been furious ever since I heard this morning. Furious. Sorry to open up my show that way today, but I am just incredibly pissed at this man. And I pinch myself. Am I in some sort of a bad dream that this guy really inhabits the White House, has really soiled the Oval Office by being in it? They talked about Bill Clinton soiling the Oval Office. Please. Please. Clinton can soil the Oval Office all he wants to, in the manner in which he did, compared to the damage this no good. Oh, I apologize. I'm probably a bit rough today, but I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it anymore. That's right. On the chat room, I do have some libation not far away, but haven't been a drinker for a long time. No, I never was much of a drinker. Have a beer once a week, something like that, and had a little bit of a heart trouble here a few years back, and not allowed to have any booze. Jeez, that's then that you wanted. But welcome to the show, everybody. I am completely flustered. If I sound like a maniac today, please understand why. I've gone off the deep end. This man, this poor, pitiful excuse of a human being, Junior Bush. Some people would say, well, you don't give him the respect he deserves as the President of the United States. The man deserves no respect at all. He doesn't deserve respect as a decent human being, even, let alone being the President of the United States. He doesn't deserve the respect of a single person that's a citizen of the United States. For that matter, anybody a citizen of the world. He deserves no respect for anything. I'm ashamed of the fact that when this man took office, I said, well, Guy, let's go with it with nothing we can do about it. He's the President of the United States. Let's hope he does well. Let's hope and pray that it does a good job for the United States. Oh, my God, am I sorry I ever gave him the benefit of the doubt ever? am I sorry that the people of the United States have put him in that office. How much lower can he go, my fellow Nazi appeasers? My fellow terrorist appeasers listening to this show. All of you who love the terrorists, like as Bush would have us believe. Love the terrorists. Love the fact that 9/11 happened. Love the fact that people are getting killed all over the Middle East. Just love it. That's what he would have us believe. He would have us believe that we'll just take down all the border guards around the country. We'll just open up the ports and we'll welcome the terrorist right in. Come in and destroy anything you want. In fact, take everything we have. We don't care because we're liberal Democrats. Hell, we don't care. Let's just give the country up to the terrorist, right? That's what Bush would have you believe. Going to drive me off the edge. I've talked to several of my friends today in this particular business, and everybody feels like having a drink. And then there's the fact, of course, that his little friend, Joe Lieberman, He thinks the remarks of John McCain, he thinks the remarks of George Bush were right on the money. Joe Lieberman, who obviously loves Israel more than he loves America. Joe Lieberman. Anything for Israel. Anything. Another disgraceful human being. Absolutely disgraceful. Let's give it to you here. No, not that way. Let's give you Bush's little speech and the little news deal that goes along with it.
Some seem to believe that we should negotiate with the terrorists and radicals as if some ingenious argument will persuade them they have been wrong all along. We've heard this foolish delusion before. As Nazi tanks crossed into Poland in 1939, an American senator declared, "Lord, if I could only have talked to Hitler, all this might have been avoided." We have an obligation to call this what it is: the false comfort of appeasement.
The Obamacare.
That man gets up and makes that speech. A man who has literally had no State Department for his entire tenure in office. He's had people as Secretary of State that didn't do anything in the way of diplomacy. I don't know. Maybe their hands were completely tied. Let's not forget that the Bush family directly helped those Nazi tanks come across the line. Directly, the Bush family was involved. You know, you are not responsible for the sins of your father and your grandfather, but how dare you, you miserable son of a bitch, get up and make reference to that with the Democrats after the history your family has. In front of the Knesset. As you know, I despise the man. Despise him. I despise everything he stands for. He stands for the rich, the powerful, for corporate America, for greed, for corruption, and now this. I despise him. I didn't despise Richard Nixon. I didn't despise Ronald Reagan. But this pathetic piece of crap that's our president right now, I despise him. Wonder how long it would take the Homeland Security people to get here. Joe Biden. Joe Biden told it like it was today. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. There should be outrage from every Democrat today. There should be every Democrat in Washington in front of a microphone, any available microphone today. They should all call their hometown newspaper, all the congressmen, everybody should express outrage at this. All of them. Joe Biden, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Joe Biden, called President Bush's comments accusing Barack Obama and other Democrats of wanting to appease terrorists bullshit. And if the president disagrees so strongly with the idea of talking to Iran, then he needs to fire his secretaries of state and defense, both of whom, Biden said, have pushed to sit down with the Iranians. To quote Biden, this is bullshit. This is malarkey. This is outrageous. Outrageous for the president of the United States to go to a foreign country, sit in the Knesset, and make this kind of ridiculous statement, Biden said angrily in a brief interview just off the Senate floor. Biden said, he's the guy who weakened us. He's the guy that increased the number of terrorists in the world. His policies have produced this vulnerability the United States has. His intelligence community pointed that out, not me. The NIE pointed that out. And what are you talking about? Is he going to fire Condi Rice? Condi Rice has talked about the need to sit down. So his first two appeasers are Rice and Gates. I hope he comes home and does something. He quoted Gates saying Wednesday that we, quote, need to figure out a way to develop some leverage and then sit down and talk with them. January the 20th, 2009, I don't know, around noon, could well be the happiest day. Maybe since the Second World War was over, I don't know. You may envision some pictures like they had on Broadway in downtown New York City of the confetti flying and the people out in the streets celebrating the day George Bush walks off of that podium as an ex-president of the United States. That will be one happy day. We should have a national party. We should all order fireworks and hit the streets and have a holiday. Get drunk and celebrate the departure of these people from Washington, D.C. I seem to remember a little statement by Gerald R. Ford. Was it R? I don't know what his middle name was. I think it was Gerald R. Ford. Do you remember when he got up in front of the national public the day that he pardoned Nixon and said, our long national nightmare is over? Well, if we elect the right president this coming year, our long national nightmare will be over, because no matter how the next president, if a Democrat performs, there is no way in hell that they could get to the level that these guys have. I've been a little bit rough today, but I feel a little bit rough over this. I really do. The nerve of him. First of all, heading to Israel. What does he go over there and speak to Israel now for? Here's a man who has done nothing for peace in the Middle East. Here's a man who's done nothing but damage to the problems of the Middle East. He has exacerbated the troubles in the Middle East by many times over. Hasn't done a damn thing to promote peace in the Middle East. Nothing. when Israel was destroying Beirut this last year, what did he do about it? Nothing. What does he do? Oh. Forgive me, everyone. I'm almost speechless over this today. I don't know that I've seen anything in a long time that has sent me over the edge like this. You know, we talked yesterday about this guy, this Bush, this miserable bastard. We talked about him yesterday, saying how he gave up golf. Yes, I know Keith Olbermann did a big, long diatribe about it last night. We talked about it yesterday for quite a little while. He gave up golf. And we find out later on that he hadn't even done that when he said he did. He even lied about that. You know, here's a guy that would lie about getting up in the morning. Here's a guy that you truly can look at this man and Dick Cheney. Let me put the two of them together. Let me add Condoleezza Rice with that mix. And let me add Mitch McConnell to that mix. And let me add John Boehner to that mix. Let me line those people up and tell me if you can believe a word that comes out of their mouths ever. Ever. Because you can't. You would like to think that, oh yes, behind the scenes, your leadership, once in a while, they stretch the truth. They spin it a little bit. But basically, for the good of the nation, you're getting the truth most of the time, at least. You can't believe a damn thing that these people say. Nothing. We don't torture. No. We know they have WMDs. No. Oh, we're going to liberate the Iraqis. No. The war will be a cakewalk. No. Nothing. You can believe nothing that they say. Nothing. I won't apologize for making the statement that only a damn fool would vote for a Republican for president this time around. I will not apologize for that. Only a damn fool would vote for a Republican for president in this next election. I don't care who it is. A damn fool is what it would take to pull the lever for John McCain in this next election, knowing that he will continue the same sorry-ass programs that Junior Bush has put into effect. Knowing that he'll continue right on with his illegal occupation of Iraq. Knowing about his inept military solution to what's going on in Afghanistan, knowing that we've lost ground there in the past few years, not gained, knowing that we've lost ground in Iraq, not gained, knowing all that, and surely every responsible voter does know all that, how could you vote for a Republican in this next election? Oh, he's protected us. We haven't had an attack in our country since 9/11. Yeah, that's it. We haven't had an attack since 9/11. That's why I'd vote for another Republican, because, you see, they really protect us well. We never mind that 9/11 happened on their watch, you see. I know that. Never mind that Junior Bush out on the ranch one day, Condi Rice came to him and gave him the report from the CIA that something bad was going to happen, and he just kind of sloughed it off and said, "Yeah, you know, don't bother me, honey. By the way, Condi, I'll meet you later. I'll be back. But don't bother me with any of that president stuff. I don't have time. I'm at the ranch. And besides that, Condi, I don't understand what you're talking about anyway. Who is Iraq? And where is that anyway? It's near Puerto Rico, isn't it? That's the level that we're talking about here. That's how far it goes. Georgie's in Israel getting his frequent flyer miles piled up on Air Force One. You and I are paying for his trips around the world, his farewell tour. Thank God for that, at least. Do these trips benefit anybody or anything except for Bush and his wife? Do you suppose that other than knowing that a visit from the President of the United States is an absolute guarantee that the pipeline of money flowing from the United States to Israel will continue on? Do you think the Israeli people care about seeing Bush? I don't think they do. I don't think they do at all. In fact, I read a very significant comprehensive poll today that shows that the Israeli people are all for sitting down and talking, getting a dialogue going. They are. But, of course, the government of Israel is not. God help us if Netanyahu gets back in there. And it appears that he will. It certainly appears that there's a good chance of that. 866-546-5254. By the way, you are listening to the Guy James Show, a somewhat angry Guy James today. I've got my feathers ruffled a bit, more than a bit. I don't know where to go with this show today. You know, this is just another example of the right-wing disillusion. Actually, it's delusions, what I mean to say. We had one of them say the other day said I'm convinced that this is a conservative nation by and large. And you hear these crazy people say that all the time, that this is a conservative nation. It is not. It's not center right. It's not center. Take a look at some of the polls. Have you looked at some of the polls on the issues that the Republicans say are their issues and that the nation is center right on or right? You know, abortion, the right to choose. According to ABC News Washington Post poll, 57% of Americans want it legal. In all or most cases, 57%. That means the GOP platform is out of touch with the American people because only 15% of the people want it legal in all cases. Okay, so scratch that one off as a bunch of bullshit hypocrisy. And on global warming, according to a Gallup poll, March 6th to 9th of 2008, these aren't 10 years ago, these are modern polls. 66% of Americans worry about either a great deal or a fair amount about global warming. The drug junkie Limbaughs account for only 17% of the people. So there's another issue, a Republican issue that you can check off that they're dead wrong on. Healthcare. Americans prefer one of the Democrat plans 59% to 33%, according to the Kaiser poll, February of 2008. 59 to 33. You tell me which party's on the right track. And gay marriage, 54% support giving them the legal right of married couples in areas such as health insurance, inheritance, and pension coverage. Only 43% oppose. So there's another issue. Those are four big issues that the Republicans claim that, you know, that's what their party stands for. Well, that's all well and good if that's what your party stands for, but these polls show that your party is out of touch with the American people. Absolutely out of touch with the American people. And they're finding out, these last three congressional races, special races that the Republicans have lost, don't think that doesn't have Washington, D.C. turned upside down, because it does. It hasn't turned upside down. They're having trouble raising money. They never have trouble raising money. That's how they've won their seats in Congress. That's how they've maintained control over the past 30 years, by and large. Not this time. Democrats are going to outraise them. Congressional reelection committee for both parties, the Democrats are going to win that. And I'll bet you we gain another 20 seats at a minimum, another 20. And I'll bet you we gain another 4 or 5 seats in the United States Senate as well. Still not enough for the 60, but then again, that's too much to hope for. But at least we won't have a president that vetoes bills that they do pass. And the press, you know, with this primary situation going on now with the Democrats, the press just loves the fact that the primary has been this hotly contested thing that's been going on, and the press, the media, they've reaped the rewards of this ratings and profit. So they want to keep it going, and as much as guys like Olbermann and Tweety Bird and Russert sit there and drone on about how damaging it is to the Democratic Party, and I am getting six. Keith, I love you, man, I do. But this anti-Hillary rant of yours every single night, this bias is really pissing me off. But that's just a personal thing. But it goes on, you know, how damaging this is, and they get what's her name from Air America on there every night, and they talk about how damaging this is to the Democratic Party, and how Hillary or Rachel Maddow and how Hillary ought to cash in her chips. You know they're loving this damage. Polls say a certain percentage of Hillary's backers will vote for McCain, and a big number of Obama backers will vote for McCain if their candidates didn't get the nomination. Please. I've heard that I don't know how many times in my life, and I know people say that right now because they're disappointed that their candidate may lose, but come on. Vote for McCain. Democrats, vote for McCain. Get serious. This is a guy who vows to keep the war going for another 100 years. Get serious. They're not going to vote for John McCain. A lot of the young people, you know, you're hot, you're passionate about all this. Okay, I understand that. And a lot of people, they go shove a microphone under their face when their candidate is lost. And, well, I'm not going to vote for the other guy. They will. They will. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hey, Ann Coulter, you make my little soldier stand attention when I see your equine features on my bedroom TV. Hey, Ann Coulter, they say that you're a poltergeist or a banshee or a witch. I think you're just the perfect creature to help this cracker scratch his itch. While you're flogging the liberals and calling them faggots, I'm flogging the dummy, I really smack it for you. Hey, Ann, I know you want it too. And while I'm flogging, there's a movie in my noggin starring me and you and some other dame in combinations for which not even Hindus have a name. Hey, Ann Coulter, if I could be less older, richer, more handsome, with more class, bet I could get you to my mansion. Bet I could, well, you know, don't even tell me you ain't into that. Oh, Ann, I love you, and I defend you all the time. When people say you're mean, I say that's just showmanship, the way a dominatrix uses a whip. Oh, and I think you're beautiful, you willowy thoroughbred uber goddess. When they say you look horsey, it gives me conniptions. I say cultish is a better description. shoulders, your sunken cheeks and dishwater mane. I say it makes you look exotic, they say it makes you look insane. But they're just jealous, cause lots and lots of fellas have fallen happy victims to your charms. Those radio callings who wear swastikas on their arms. Oh, I'd be ecstatic, my beautiful Annie, if you'd meet me in the paddock. Gimme puddin' Annie tonight. I'd ride you till the morning light. I can't believe anyone could be so silly to suggest that you're a fella, not really a filly. I'm sure that's not true. At least 65% sure.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Hey, I was down at the grocery store this morning. The local Publix grocery store just off the road here. Rode my bicycle down there. Had to get a couple of things. And there's this gentleman that works there, and we have a lot of retired people here that have second jobs, not because they want to, but because the economy is so nasty that instead of retiring, and we'll talk about that a little later on in the program today, instead of retiring, there are a lot of people just going to keep right on working, keep right on going. And anyway, this little old guy's name is Bob, and I don't want to embarrass Bob, so I won't give his last name, but I've known him for a while now. And They wear those little vests that look just like the ones that they wear at Walmart. They're blue and all, and it's the same kind of a deal. And anyway, I see Bob these days, and he's out picking up some carts in the lot this morning, and I was chaining my bicycle up to the post, and I got to looking at Bob, and I thought, you know, he got white hair and all, and he's a little hunched over and everything, and he's, you know, he's a senior, all right. He's a senior citizen, and I thought, you know, he looks just like John McCain. And I walked over to Bob, and of course, you know, hey, guy, how are you doing? And I'm doing fine. And hey, good to see you and all that, real friendly guy. And I said, you know, Bob, I never said this to you before, but I got to looking at you today. And I saw John McCain last night. He said, nope, don't say it. I know what you're going to say. God damn it, don't you say it. And it's the first time I've ever seen this old boy upset. And I said, Bob, why do you know what I'm going to say? He said, I know what you're going to say. I said, no, you don't know what I'm going to say. I said, yes, I do. You're going to tell me I look just like John McCain. Well, actually, yes. That is what I was going to tell you. How did you know? He said, yeah, because everybody says that. I look just like John McCain. He said, I'm a Democrat. I've never voted for a goddamn Republican in my life, and I wouldn't vote for John McCain. He said, it really pisses me off when people say that to me. Well, Bob, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. I mean, I just thought it was kind of funny, you know, but he didn't think it was funny at all. Not at all. But you know, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. You know the look I'm talking about. I got a little blue vest on there and everything, and you know, the guy that will brag to you that how the oatmeal's lowering your cholesterol and all, and you're sitting watching TV at night, and when the phone rings, you pick up the TV remote and stick it up your head. You know what I'm talking about. Made him mad as hell. Yeah. Well, I don't want to get into geezer stuff. I've been spoken of as a geezer myself, so I won't go there. 866-546-5254. That put me in a little better mood thinking about it. It was funny. As I must admit, when I walked in the store, I really had a smile on my face today. I know Bob will get over it. I know he will. Did you see Senator McCain's Fantasyland speech today? Did you see that? Man, that was really something. By 2013, I mean, did you see any of that? By 2013, he's going to have most of the troops home. He says, didn't say how or what kind of a solution he's going to find over there. He's going to, it'll be a chicken in every pot and two cars in every garage, and gas will be cheap again, and we're going to all be going to live in the life of Riley. By 2013, he didn't have any basis in fact for any of this, but somebody said, one of the reporters brought it up to him and said it sounded kind of like a magic carpet ride or something, and McCain, oh no. That's a big complaint I have about all of the candidates all the time. I'm gonna make healthcare better, and I'm gonna make the economy better, and I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna do. Well, sit down and spell it out for me. Now, I know they have, but they don't do it enough. McCain never has. McCain hasn't spelled out anything to anybody, and I think Barack could do a better job of that as well. But I'm one of these issues people. Are you an issues? I think most of my listeners are issues people. I don't want anybody standing up there and sweet-talking me and telling me, yeah, it's going to be great, and if you'll only elect me, I'll make sure that you eat well and you have health care. Well, tell me how. Tell me how you will get the cooperation of Congress. Tell me how you'll get the money for it. Tell me how you'll implement these plans. Tell me when. How, when, and why, and all that. That's what I want to know. I don't want to be sweet-talked. I want to know the facts. If you think, of course, I know this is be the death knell for any candidate, but if you've got a war that you're fighting and you don't have any money and you're going to have to raise taxes, just tell me. I won't like it, but I'd like it better than you lying to me, which they do constantly. Raise taxes. Oh, no. Oh, no. I would never do that. I would never do that, and as soon as they get in there, they do it, you know. But that was a real fantasy land speech, believe you me. I really thought it was. And I see the GOP is trying another one of their tricks. I can't think of the guy's name offhand. I didn't write it down, but he's been involved in this kind of thing before. Out in Missouri, or depending on which side of Missouri you live in, Missouri on one side. And I think it's on the east side of Missouri, it's Missouri. And over on the west side, it's Missouri. I believe that's where, I don't know, it splits down the middle there someplace. You live on this side of the line, the county line, the GOP is going to try and disenfranchise voters in Missouri just the way they did in Indiana. And it's an important swing state. And they figure that they can cut about 240,000 off the voter rolls by doing this photo ID thing and all. And they'll swing it to the Republicans and thus win the national election. We told you they'd do anything they can. And I think you'll see a movement to do this all over the country because it does disenfranchise some people. Some of the elderly don't necessarily have photo IDs anymore. I read the story the other day of an elderly woman had didn't even have a birth certificate. She's voted in every election. She was, what, 93? Now she might not get to vote because she doesn't have a driver's license. I don't know. I don't know what they'll do about it. But you're going to see this all over the country. You're going to see voter fraud. You're going to see lots of stories. I'm sure Brad Friedman will be all over it. They better start checking the voting machines and all that around the country. They better keep an eye on it. They better start being ever vigilant right now. because there's going to be a massive campaign to do whatever is necessary. Now, I happen to think this is going to be one of those elections where the margin should be so big that monkeying with the voting machine shouldn't matter, but it will. And so we do need to be vigilant about that. And I don't say that. I'm not one of these conspiracy guys, as you well know. But I do recognize who we're dealing with here. I full well recognize who we're dealing with. And we're dealing with a party now that will do anything to hang on to power. And I do, as I've often said, I do mean, and I say this sadly, they'll do anything. Anything. And you know that word covers a lot of territory. So I think we better be on the lookout for that and better be getting ready for it, because it will happen, especially in some of the states that where it's going to be a little close. Believe me, there are plans in the works right now. There are plans in the works right now. We know it's happened before. We know it'll happen again. I'm just saying. Of course, we had the big news last night, and wasn't it a shame for Hillary that she didn't get to bask in the glow of her huge victory in West Virginia for even 24 hours before John Edwards pulled the rug out from under her? And I love John Edwards. You know I do. I think John Edwards would make a fine president. Fine president. I love the guy and his wife. They're first class people. First class. But he listened to his conscience, or whatever it is he listens to when he backs somebody, and said he's going to throw his endorsement to Barack Obama. And maybe he does have an eye toward becoming attorney general or something like that. If he does, more power to him. But do you think that'll help him any? Do you think it'll help Barack Obama win the presidency of the United States? Do you think perhaps having the endorsement of John Edwards would help Obama perhaps win a state like Virginia? Or let me dream here a little bit. Maybe Georgia or South Carolina or Tennessee or Alabama or Mississippi. Do you think it would help? Coupled with the fact that there's a large African-American population in all of those states, and coupled with the fact that John Edwards is a Southerner, they might be onto something here. They might be onto something here that, you know, we're not in a situation now where we're going to have red-blue states anymore, and I say that very sadly. But it's going to be black-white states. That's what it's going to be. Mark my word, that's what it's going to be. You could take a poll right now and measure the amount of racism in every state in the union. You'll find out that we're going to have black states and we're going to have white states. That's the way it's going to be. If I sound crazy for saying that, so be it. That's what I believe. And I do think that Obama may be able to take some of those states. It could be that the old red-blue thing is out the window in many cases. It could be. Maybe he'll take Ted Strickland from Ohio in order to carry the Midwest states. And again, I'm sounding like it's over with now, and I, for all intents and purposes, I think it is. But just something to look out for. Edwards, the timing, as far as taking the glow off of the Hillary Clinton big victory in West Virginia, the timing was impeccable for the Barack Obama people. I don't think they could have planned it any better. In fact, I saw him saying that coming up about John Edwards, and I thought, Hey, I do want to remind everybody, we're going to have John Dean on with us coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to do things a little different today. We will not have news at the top of the hour today. We'll postpone that until after having John Dean on, and we'll put John on to talk about his new book called Pure Goldwater. I tell you something, the history behind this book is really interesting. And you've heard me mention many times about whatever happened to the old-time Republicans like Eisenhower and Goldwater and Nelson Rockefeller, people that I admired. Wouldn't have voted for him, but I admired him. And John Dean is family friend with the Goldwaters, and he collaborated with Barry Jr. to write this terrific book called Pure Goldwater. And we're going to have him on right at the top of the hour, I think it is. So do have that to look forward to. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call and put your 2 cents in on anything that we happen to be talking about today. Anything that we've gone kind of across the board today. There must be something that that somebody's interested in, right? Yes. What was I going to go on to next? I did mention Joe Lieberman. Oh, how I love Joe Lieberman. Ned Lamont, what did you do wrong up there? What did you do wrong? But I enjoyed very much hearing John Kerry's words about Bush's speech. Let me see if I can find that here. I know I have that. Let's do John Kerry. This is off of MSNBC. I give them credit where credit is due.
A supporter of Barack Obama. Senator, good to speak to you. The White House says that these words, as you just heard from our reporter John Yang as well, that they were not directed specifically at Senator Obama, that they were including the senator and anyone who agreed with him on this topic. What is your opinion, sir, when you heard this? What were your first thoughts?
My first thoughts are that the president is playing the same old game, which is insulting to everybody here in America. He ought to be making peace in Israel, not playing politics over there. And the fact is that the president's job is, in these waning months of his administration, not to launch an attack, one of those red herring attacks from the Knesset in Israel, because nobody I know of in office in the United States, and certainly not Barack Obama, has ever talked about negotiating with Hamas or Hezbollah. It's one of those fictitious things. Set it up and knock it down and pretend people are doing it. And the fact is, if he's talking about Iran, then I hope he's going to come home and call for the resignation of his own cabinet, because the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State have both favored negotiations with Iran. I mean, just yesterday, Secretary Gates said we need to figure out how to develop some leverage and then sit down and talk with them. And last year, Secretary Rice called for negotiations with Iran on their nuclear program.
Senator, let me jump in here and speak more directly to what the president may have been pointing to, this question of whether a president should directly negotiate with rogue leaders. It's been one of the most prominent points of difference between Obama and Clinton, certainly. Obama has said that he would meet with heads of state from countries like Cuba, Iran, North Korea. Clinton says she would reach out through other diplomatic channels, that she would not want to dignify the presidential office with such a meeting. Do you agree with Senator Obama on this point?
I think what Senator Obama said point blank is that his administration would engage and be willing to meet with these people. You know, that's why you have a Secretary of State. That's why you have ambassadors. You know, he's not talking about just having a meeting for the sake of a meeting. He's talking about how you engage and proceed forward, and he would be willing as president to make sure that his administration does that. In addition, you know, nobody ever takes away from the president the right to say no. Nobody takes away the right to sit there and have a discussion about something and say, no, you're wrong. We're not going to do that. And we're not going to do that until you do this. The fact is that Jack Kennedy, President Kennedy, said, you know, you should never negotiate out of fear, but you should never fear to negotiate. Richard Nixon sent Henry Kissinger to China. Did he have an agreement ahead of time of what he would get? Ronald Reagan, who called the Soviet Union the evil empire, sat down with Gorbachev and got a deal on nuclear weapons. The world is safer when you engage with people. And Barack Obama is not talking about some silly sit-down, lighthearted meeting with a leader of a country that we disagree with vehemently, like Iran or others. He's talking about how you engage them in a way that constructively moves the world forward. And he is willing to have his administration do that. I agree with that policy. Yes, I think
Senator,
it is important to engage.
Senator, let me just ask you quickly, because we're running out of time here. We've got some breaking news. But Senator Obama came back very quickly with his response. Is he making a point here that he's not afraid to take the president on directly at this point?
Well, I don't think he needs needs to make that point. I think people know he's not, and that's why he's going to be the nominee of the party. But the fact is that George Bush's policies have made America less safe. They've made us less safe. The Middle East is more unstable than it's been in decades. What an irony to have the current president in Israel blasting Democrats from the Knesset when his policies have actually seen Al-Qaeda get strengthened. They've seen Al-Qaeda be reconstituted. They've seen Hezbollah get stronger. They've seen Hamas get stronger, Israel more threatened, Iran is stronger, and Iraq is in chaos. This is a disgraceful statement by the president. It really is. He ought to apologize to the American people for going to Israel and using the Knesset in the celebration of the 60th anniversary of a state and a people that we all support and that we're all proud of, and using it for politics.
Senator John Kerry, you know, it makes me wonder when they go into the cloakroom after hearing what Joe Lieberman said today. And after knowing what a traitor Joe Lieberman has been to the Democratic Party, how can they go in the cloakroom and have any civil words with the man? How can they even talk to him? I couldn't. I could not. After what Joe Lieberman said today, knowing that he's a colleague in the Senate, I would have to disavow any relationship with him whatsoever. And I'd walk right up and tell him that. I don't want to speak to you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. That's the way I am. I know not everybody's that way, and a lot of people would just play nicey-nice with him and be cordial. I could not be cordial to a man like that. I could not. They have this sense of collegiality in the Senate, and I know they have great respect for that. My good friend, Joe Lieberman, my good friend back and forth, and my colleague, and they do remain civil. It would be hard for me. I guess I wouldn't make a very good United States senator because I wouldn't be above going right over and telling Joe Lieberman to kiss it. I really wouldn't. Don't have a use for him, I guess. I guess I've said that enough, haven't I? Okay. A lot going on in Iraq. We're hearing very little of it. There's a new offensive taking place in Mosul. Prime Minister Maliki says he's going to get al-Qaeda out of the northern city of Mosul once and for all. Yeah, sure. You know, they announced again last week that they'd caught the number one guy in Iraq. It turns out they, you know, al-Qaeda in Iraq, and they didn't. How many times have they caught the top two or three guys in al-Qaeda in Iraq? Quite a few times. Yeah, and anyway, he ordered another assault on the terrorist group and traveled to the region himself to take command of the U.S.-supported effort and to end al-Qaeda's grip on the city that has lasted almost 5 years. Good luck with that, Maliki. We'll see how that works out for you. Be nice if it did work, but knowing the reputation of the Iraqi army and knowing Maliki's reputation as a leader, don't have a whole lot of faith in that happening, do you? And we've got a report of another scam going on in Iraq. The internal military documents obtained by the Associated Press allege that companies working on reconstruction projects in Iraq are getting rich through insurance fraud. Yes, insurance fraud has made it to Iraq. According to a review by the Army Corps of Engineers, the Tikrit-based companies Sakhr Al-Fahal and Al-Jabouri made a bundle by getting paid for insurance they never received. The matter's been handed over to the Army Criminal Investigation Command, which is investigating how many similar contracts in Iraq are handled by the Army. Now, be advised that this is the last, most likely, that you will hear about this story, because any time something gets really investigated in Iraq, you hear that it's going to be investigated by this entity or that entity, and then it goes then down that black hole of the Bush administration, and we never hear about it again. Blackwater. How many Halliburton scams? How many KBR scams have they been caught with their hands in the cookie jar, and what's happened to them so far? The normal process is to find them, say, $5 million, and then give them a new contract for $500 million. That's how it normally goes. And, of course, while Bushy Boy was over in Israel visiting, the good folks over at Hamas decided to shake things up a little bit. That 60th anniversary celebration as a nation, the Palestinian militants launched a rocket from Gaza that struck a southern Israeli city, wounding at least 14 people. And Prime Minister Olmert, who is under a political dark cloud, gee, he and Bush ought to feel good together because of a bribery scandal, immediately condemned the attack and vowed to retaliate. Well, and I'm sure they will. They'll probably run in there and kill them, a couple of hundred civilians. That's the way they usually do it. Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour, and we are going to have John Dean on almost exactly at the top of the hour, so I'll break away for a break right now, and we'll be back at top of the hour with John Dean.
Got my window open wide. I got my window open wide. Got a good woman by my side. Got a good woman by my side. Now this kind of day has no night. Yeah, this kind of day has no night. And I ain't got much on my mind. I ain't got much on my mind. Cause I know something good this way comes. Now watching the streets filling up. Watching the streets filling up. In the shade of the summer sun. In the shade of the summer sun. Got sweet apple pie on the stove. Got sweet apple pie on the stove. The birds, they're all flying low. The birds, they're all flying low. Cause they know something good this way comes. Yeah, something good this way comes. The trouble doll is not moving mountains, but digging the ground that you're on. If it's true that good fortune gives no change, we got just what it takes. Call her up on my coat. Yeah, call her up on my coat. Trucks are pulling in for the show. The trucks are pulling in for the show. A grasshopper jump in the road. Grasshopper jump in the road. Kids, they're all running home. The kids, they're all running home. Cause they know something good this way comes. Yeah, something good this way comes. The trouble dog is not moving mountains, but digging the ground that you're on. If it's true that good fortune gives no change, we got just what it takes. Ooh. I got my window open wide. Got my window open wide. I got a good woman by my side. I got a good woman by my side. Cause I know something good this way comes. Yeah, something good this way comes. Yeah, something good this way comes.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show, everybody. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon for the second hour. And without further ado, as promised, we have John Dean with us. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Guy.
I'm happy to have you on today to talk about another terrific book. Man, you are prolific as a writer. You've I don't know how you do anything else over the past few years.
Well, I don't.
Well, simple answer, yeah. Just as an aside, before we get into the meat of the thing, being the author that you've turned into here over the past few years, I'm trying to think worse than Watergate and Conservatives Without Conscience and Broken Government, and this new book, Pure Goldwater, is a great read. I just got my hands on it day before yesterday. And what a great read it is. I think to become a writer, the way, you didn't envision this earlier on in your life, did you? To become an author the way you have?
Actually, I was an English lit political science undergraduate. And as a lawyer, you do a lot of writing. In fact, I've decided in my life there are two types of people who don't know writer's block. One are journalists, and two are lawyers who have to do trial work.
Hmm.
Judges don't much like, Your Honor, I've got writer's block today, so I couldn't get that brief in. So I've never had any problem. I was the editor of my school paper, and I did two books right after I left the White House, Blind Ambition and Lost Honor, and promised myself when I turned 60, I would return to writing. So I went out and made enough of a living that I could live comfortably, whether my book sold or not, and have then honored my promise. When I turned 60, I started writing again, and I've now done 8 books since then.
Well, I don't think you've had that problem of your books not selling either.
No, I haven't. It's been my wife's not complaining.
Yeah. And speaking of your wife, my regards for one thing, and I didn't know. I've read a lot about you over the years, and I didn't know Barry Goldwater Jr. Introduced you to your wife.
That's correct.
Correct. I didn't know that, and of course he co-wrote this book with you, the new one, Pure Goldwater. Tell us how you and let me explain. Very often, when I talk on this program about Republicans, I'm not talking about these so-called Republicans we have today. I am talking about the Barry Goldwaters and the Nelson Rockefellers and maybe the Dwight Eisenhowers and some of those people thrown in there. So I do mention Barry Goldwater with fondness very often. I never got caught up, although I've been a Democrat all my life, I never got caught up in the scare tactics of Lyndon Johnson when that went on during that election. But
Of course, they said if you voted for Barry Goldwater, when he was running against Lyndon Johnson, the war in Vietnam would go on. I happened to vote for Goldwater. That was one of my first votes, and the war in Vietnam did go on.
Yes, it sure did for a long time. That was an effective campaign that Johnson had against him. I have to admit that old mushroom cloud ad, I remember it well, and that was probably the original scare campaign, I don't know, in the modern history. But how did you, well, first of all, would you give us just a little bit of background of yourself with the Goldwater family?
Barry Jr. and I were roommates in prep school together, in the same school that the senator had gone to many years earlier, Stanton Military Academy down in Virginia. And that was about the time that the senator arrived in Washington in the mid-50s. And so that's when I first met the senator, and Barry Jr. and I have remained friends ever since. When he was elected to Congress, Well, actually, even before that, in 64, he wanted me to join the campaign. I couldn't because I was in law school, but we've always been in touch. And then when he got elected to Congress, I was in the Justice Department as the Associate Deputy Attorney General, and I suggested we buy houses across the street from each other when I found some really nice real estate out in Old Town, Virginia, which was the last to be developed. And we only wish we'd bought all the houses.
Yeah.
It turned out to be we bought one in partnership and each bought one to live in, and wished we'd gotten more of them because they turned out to be great investments.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, so he and I have always been friends. And the senator was somebody who obviously influenced both of us to go into public service, not because the senator suggested it, but rather we saw what he was doing with his life and the way he handled himself, and we looked upon it as a high calling, not to make a career out of it, because he, in fact, made me promise at one point that I would not stay in government more than 5 years, and I promised I wouldn't. And that 5 years happened to arrive when I was at the White House. And I went in and told my superiors that I had made a commitment to an old friend, I didn't mention who, that I was only going to stay in government for 5 years, and I was at my fifth year, and I was going to hand in my resignation. And they said, well, you can't do that. You owe it to stay with the President Nixon through the 72 election. I suspect afterwards they wished they'd taken my resignation.
I want to ask you a personal question. Did you ever have a conversation with Barry Goldwater about Richard Nixon?
Many, many. In fact, one of the before I testified before the Senate, I was not sure if my testimony, which I knew was going to be devastating, could have any negative national security impact. And while I'd never talked to the senator about what was going on during Watergate, he'd asked me once at a social gathering if Nixon was involved. And I said, Senator, to the best of my knowledge, nobody at the White House had any knowledge of that crazy break-in at the Watergate. And I would tell him the same thing today. He didn't ask me about a cover-up, and I didn't explain that. I didn't want to involve him. But before I testified before the Senate, I was concerned about national security, and he was the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. So I called Barry Jr., and I said, listen, why don't you get your dad out to the House? I really need to talk to him. I was surrounded by the press, but on Sundays they tended to leave us alone. So I said, have him come over on a Sunday, and I'll slip over to your house, and we can chat. So I did that, and I told him, I said, listen, Senator, I'm going to blow the president right out of the Oval Office with his testimony, if anybody believes me. And there's no reason they shouldn't, because it's all a damn truth. And I said, I'm concerned, that this could have some negative national security implications. So the senator said to Barry, said, son, go get me an old crow. I want to talk to John here. And so over an old crow, he said, listen, John, he said, Nixon's always been a GD liar. So you just go in and blow that SOB right out of the office and tell the truth. Then we just chatted about other things.
Well, that's the impression I always had of Barry Goldwater. Just straight up in your face. If you don't want to hear the answer, don't ask it. It appears to me that it's just the kind of guy he was. He didn't play games, did he?
What was surprising when we discovered this journal that is the basis of the book Pure Goldwater, first Barry Jr. didn't even know about it. And it's just something I happened to stumble into, that even his biographers and others who'd worked with him did not know existed. And the largest part of it is on Nixon and Watergate, which surprised all of us.
It must have been a real treasure trove for you to find out that. You found that where? At some historical foundation.
What happened is the senator and I were going to do the book together that became my book, Conservatives Without Conscience. The genesis of that book is really... Barry called me one time after his dad had left the Senate and said, listen, John, the old man's bored, he's grumpy, he loves to visit with you and talk politics, why don't you call him and visit a little bit? So I did. And the more we started talking, this was in right after Clinton had gotten elected, he said, I just don't understand what the hell's happened to the conservative movement, I don't understand what happened to the Republican Party, all this incivility, the religious right is running things, and he said, it pains me. He said, I started this movement and never dreamed that I was starting something like what it's become, and I really like to understand it. He said, maybe we should do a book on it. And so the more we talked about it, I said, I'd love to do it, and I will do the heavy lifting. He said, nobody has really gone through my papers carefully. There's a lot of history in there. I'm giving them to the Arizona Historical Foundation. They're starting to get them in order, the biographers have missed stuff, and when I've done my co-authored autobiographies, I've not really drawn on them, but you ought to go over there and take a look. There's a lot of stuff in there. Well, we didn't do the book in 91, 92, because the senator's health got bad. It was in and out, and I said, let's put this on the shelf until you're feeling better, and he really never did, and I didn't want it to be a burden on him. But after he passed away in 98, and then when I started writing, I just couldn't forget the subject that he and I had talked about, and that was what in the hell had happened to conservatism. And that would become the book, the title he suggested, Conservatives Without a Conscience. In a conversation he said to me one day, he said, John, he said, I think conservatism has lost its conscience. I said, Senator, I said, that's a great title for a book, Conservatives Without Conscience. He said, I agree. Let's make that the title and get the answer. Well, as I say, at that time I discovered a private journal when I went back to actually write the book, that the Historical Foundation was just starting to really get into his papers and get them organized. And I said, listen, look for this type of material. First of all, it was done, a lot of it was done, and was just stuck in random files and wasn't well organized, wasn't all in one place. And back as early as 1938, when Barry Jr. was born, he starts with a portable typewriter and makes his first journal entry. And he continues this journal literally up till a couple years before he passes away. And while he constantly is complaining to himself about how he drops it, he'll pick it back up again. And so you have it when he's in business, you'll have it when he's first enters politics and runs for election at the city council, his first Senate campaign, when he gets to Washington. And so there's enough of it that it really gives a fascinating picture of this man in his own words. He didn't write it for publication, but here it is. We call it pure Goldwater because there are no staffers that are writing this. This is literally from his lips, or actually the fingertips on the portable typewriter. Later, when electronic dictating machines became available, he would dictate when he was flying, either as a pilot or as a passenger. And so there's a fairly massive collection. A lot of it is material, you know, he's just talking to the family, trying to give them things to think about, trying to straighten out his own thinking. We didn't use everything there. We used what we thought was very representative and relevant today that would people be find interesting. And to our surprise, the largest amount of material related to Richard Nixon and Watergate.
Well, he started this journal, correct me if I'm wrong, I seem to remember something or other about losing his own father when he was a fairly young man. Is that why he
exactly.
started this journal?
Exactly. He said he wished his father, you know, he could have had the wisdom of his father to pass on to him, and unless that never happened for his son or sons that came along, he, you know, started recording this material for first the boys, then the whole family. When he traveled the world, and you know, for example, when he's ferrying P-47s across the North Atlantic, the first fighter planes to ever be taken across in solo flights, he's in that first group, flying in the number three spot across the North Atlantic, and he records all this. He happened to do that section in longhand, and it's fascinating, you know. And he was doing it for his kids. And as I say, you know, sort of just he was that kind of attention to detail type of person. And the other, when we found some gaps and we wanted to make sure there was at least some narrative to the book, the other thing we were very well aware of is that as a member of the Senate, he was one who didn't let staff answer his mail. He literally used that as the vehicle to stay in touch with what is happening. And when in his state, he would go through stacks of letters, dictate responses to all of them. If there was something that was recurring and repetitive, he would give the staff a sample letter to use for everybody then, you know, on, say it was a single issue that he was being lobbied on, and there were, you know, maybe 100 letters would come in, but he would always draft the first draft. So we used a few of those, and of course correspondence with his colleagues was always his own as well. But 90% of this book is his from his journal.
Fascinating. I imagine discovering this treasure trove of material, it's like looking into someone's soul.
It is, and there's a lot of history, a lot of things he never told his family. For example, Nixon had offered him something he would have loved at the height of Watergate, the ambassadorship to Mexico, but yet it shows the man's integrity rather than let that plum dangle and dissuade him from doing what was necessary in dealing with Nixon. When time came necessary to deal with it, you know, the plum went aside, and he told Nixon he'd bought the ranch and was trying to get out of there. Another one was that no one had ever known, and in fact, his family was surprised by a lot of this, that Gerald Ford, when he became president, the first person he offered the vice presidency to was Barry Goldwater. Goldwater didn't take he turned him down because he thought he could be more effective given his seniority in the Senate, and he thought that somebody needed to be there to help rebuild the party and just the country to keep it stable. That's one of the reasons he supported Ford rather than Reagan when they ran against each other, because Goldwater believed that after Watergate, the country needed some stability.
Wow, so interesting. John, could you take a couple of minutes and tell us where had, in Barry's opinion before he passed on, how far is the right in politics now from where Barry Goldwater stood on it?
Well, I think you'd have to say that he's well left of center today. The fact that, you know, his libertarian and common sense streak, he would have an enormous problem with preemptive war. He believed in a strong defense, but who doesn't? But he didn't believe you should go out and try to police the world or nation build or spread democracy or any of these claims that get us in fights around the world. The fact that we've got 170-some major bases around the world in the aftermath of the Cold War, I think he would be saying, hey, let's pull those back. We need to spend that money at home. So he certainly wouldn't buy into the militarism that the conservatives are pushing today. The spending would horrify him that Republicans are now engaged in. That's everything that they said they wouldn't do, they have done. The overly aggressive imperial presidency would be something he would have great difficulty accepting. On policy, those are sort of process matters. On policy, for example, like abortion, people thought, well, when he got old, he got senile and changed his mind. One of the things we did just in purpose in the book is put some correspondence showing that even before Roe v. Wade, Goldwater was a pro-choice. Just didn't believe the government should tell any woman what she should do with her body. That was her decision and her family's and her doctor's, and not the government to set laws as to how they deal with their body. The same when he left office, of course, it became he got very close to Bill and Hillary Clinton as a result of his stepping forward as the former chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee and on the issue of gays in the military. When Clinton was trying to get the don't ask, don't tell policy adopted, Goldwater stepped forward and said, listen. He said, you know, I think it's terrific that gays and lesbians serve in the military. The question isn't whether they're straight or not. The question is whether they can shoot straight, and that's all it's about.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm all for them. Their sexuality has nothing to do with their providing service for their country. So anyway, these issues would place Goldwater, as I say, well left of center today by most any measuring rod.
You mentioned the Clintons. There's a story about him calling Hillary Clinton on her birthday one time.
Yeah, there is. He actually, it was President Clinton called the senator, and after he had, they'd had some correspondence and things over with Bill Clinton thanking him for the help on the gays in the military issue and some other things he'd come out he'd, for example, told a lot of his conservative colleagues who were attacking both Bill and Hillary to back off. You know, this guy just, you know, he's got a tough job. He doesn't need to have people beating up on him. This was when Whitewater was first starting to surface. He said, this doesn't have anything to do with this man now that he's been elected. Let him run the country and get off his case. And so Bill Clinton appreciated that, and they started having conversations and correspondence. And so when it was one of Hillary's 40, 50, I don't know which birthday it was, maybe 45, I'm not sure, called the senator and said, listen, you're the man who influenced Hillary to get interested in politics. She was a Goldwater girl. That was her first political venturing. And she's never met you, and I've told her I've talked to you, and what a pleasure you are. It would be just a terrific thing if you could surprise her on this surprise birthday party we're having up in the residence, if you called her. And Senator said, I'd be happy to do so, and did so. And Hillary, some years later, would show up at his house in Phoenix, as surprising as you can be when you have a Secret Service detail
yes.
precede you.
John, if you've got just a couple more minutes, can you explain the relationship between John McCain and Barry Goldwater? The McCain camp would have us believe that they were very chummy and the greatest of friends and as close politically as could be, but I am having a hard time with that.
Yeah, you should. We put a little correspondence in there. There's no question that Barry Goldwater did his best to help McCain win his seat in 86 when he was leaving the Senate. But as I read it and read all of the correspondence, I didn't put it all in there. He's doing it not for John McCain, but rather for Jack McCain, Admiral Jack McCain, who's John McCain's father, who Senator Goldwater knew well and greatly admired. I don't think he had the greatest admiration for John McCain when John McCain first came out to Arizona in 81, I guess it was, and ran for the House seat. He called him a carpetbagger. He said he doesn't know anything about Arizona, and he's just out here trying to pick off a new district as a result of the census that gave them Arizona another seat. So when finally the relationship does sour visibly, and you can see it in the correspondence, when McCain has gotten himself in trouble with the Keating Five, where he's intervened on behalf of the big SNL mogul Charles Keating in Arizona and a big contributor.
Oh, yes, he and DeConcini and John Glenn and I'm trying
right.
to think of else, yeah.
Right, Goldwater was not very happy with that, and then McCain started using Goldwater's name for fundraisers, and so Senator Goldwater just pulled him right up short, we put some of that correspondence in there to show how the relationship did sour. But John McCain calls himself a Goldwater conservative. He should be very lucky that the senator isn't around, because the last time somebody did that was a fellow by the name of Doug Weed came out to Arizona and ran for Congress and called himself a Goldwater conservative when the senator was still alive. And so what the senator did was endorsed Weed's opponent, Karen, what's her name? Can't remember her last name. Anyway, she was a Democrat, and he said, I'm endorsing Karen English.
Yes.
That I'm endorsing. If I lived in the 6th District, I would endorse Karen English. That pretty much put to rest whether Weed was really a Goldwater conservative.
Ouch. That would be John, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. We could talk for hours and hours and hours about this great book. It's another fine work of yours and Barry Jr. Pure Goldwater. It's, of course, available everywhere. And I haven't looked at the bestseller list, but I'm sure it's probably on there someplace.
Yeah. Well, it'll be a slow seller because it's we put it out in an election year because we just thought this man is not only iconic, he's exemplary, but there's not enough controversy in here to probably make it a bestseller, but it's a labor of love. And it's doing nicely, I can tell you that.
Well, and if you want to understand what a true conservative is, what a true conservatism is, you need to read this book and find out, not this whatever it is that we're calling it today. John, thank you so much for being on the program. Always a pleasure, and hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks so much.
Well.
John Dean. Well, there's one of the nicest gentlemen in all of I want to say politics. He's not involved in politics anymore, but lives and breathes it and writes about it. And one of the more knowledgeable, gracious people you'll ever meet in your life. Did speak to him one time about his memory. He does have a photographic memory. If you want to sit and talk political history in the last 40 years, there's a guy to sit and do it with. He's just got an amazing capacity to just remember everything that was ever said to him, and some terrific personal stories to tell. My God, when you talk about going in that day and testifying before the Watergate committee, there's a cancer on the presidency. This man has played a pivotal role. pivotal role in straightening out the government of the United States in the Watergate. You know, his honesty, his integrity came to the fore. And yes, he was a Republican. Yes, he was in the Republican administration, but it was proven that his honesty and integrity came above everything else. It rose above politics. It rose above his relationships in the White House with Ehrlichman and Haldeman and all that. He knew what was going on, and he told the truth when asked about the truth, and the nation's forever indebted to him for that. So many good books that he's written. Again, Worse Than Watergate is really a great book, and Conservatives Without Conscience is as well. And this new one, Pure Goldwater, it's a gem. It really is. So thanks very much to Mr. John Dean for coming on the program today. It is always a pleasure. Well, I think what we're going to do now, we've done everything inside out and backwards today. We're going to go to the news right now from the top of the hour. We taped it for you, and we'll be right back after the news. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Will a blue tide wash the red away in many states and congressional districts this fall? United Steelworkers Indiana Rapid Response Coordinator Brett Voorhees thinks that it will. Democrats, backed by unions, have won three recent special elections in solid red congressional districts, Illinois, Louisiana, and in Mississippi. In Indiana, Voorhees says that the USW made the difference there, backing Jill Long Thompson, the first woman to win the Democratic gubernatorial nomination in Indiana. He believes unions will help turn Indiana blue regardless of whether the Democratic presidential nominee is Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton.
I think Indiana is on the path to being a blue state. Just the impact that we had in our primary when, 1.2 million people came out and voted Democrat, which is the biggest primary, as far as I know, that we've had in Indiana history. So I think either one is going to bring a big impact to the state of Indiana and possibly turn Indiana into a blue state.
Voorhees says that worker political action through their unions can make a huge difference. In Indiana, Republican Governor Mitch Daniels took away state employee collective bargaining rights in his first hour in office. Workers in their unions, Voorhees says, can reverse actions like those.
Jill, on day one, will restore those collective bargaining rights for state employees and give them their union back.
While Senator Hillary Clinton spent Wednesday hitting the talk show circuit on the heels of her 41-point victory in West Virginia, Senator Barack Obama was hitting the manufacturing circuit in Michigan. Jesse Russell reports.
Democratic presidential candidate and Senator Barack Obama spent part of Wednesday in Warren, Michigan, where he laid out his manufacturing plan. The proposal calls for $150 billion for the development of green technology over the next decade, which he believes will result in the creation of more than 5 million green jobs and reinforce the country's infrastructure. Obama used the opportunity to take on his Republican presidential competitor, John McCain. He said McCain doesn't have a vision for bringing jobs back to Michigan or even creating new ones. Obama said his plan will benefit from the skilled workforce that already exists in the Midwest by offering job training that allows competition in the world economy. McCain's campaign fired back after Obama's speech. They said his manufacturing plan shows weak leadership and poor judgment.
Here's today's economic report. Food prices were sharply higher in April, the biggest jump in food prices in 18 years. Inflation is running officially now at 3.9%. Gas prices have hit another record high, and home foreclosures in April were up 65% over a year ago, with more than 243,000 households going into foreclosure. Kevin Phillips, author of the book Bad Money, says more misery is actually being felt by workers than government numbers indicate. He says real consumer prices are up by much more than the official inflation number. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What will you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else.
Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hold your applause, please. Hey, thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. We'd love to have you join us, 866-546-5254. We just finished an interesting interview with Mr. John Dean, author of the new book, Pure Goldwater, and you will enjoy that book very, very much. I'm saying that not necessarily for John's benefit, although I hope he sells lots of books, but you should read this book, really. I know some of you, I've gotten email from some of you before, say, well, you know, you talk about Republicans like they used to be. Well, yeah, I didn't ever agree with the platform of the party, but back in the days of Goldwater, and particularly with Barry Goldwater, he was an honorable man, and he was a reasonable man, and he is a man that would be left to center today, consider that. So that's why you know you might want to, for your own edification, you want to learn something about what a true conservative was, a true conservative with a conscience. You should read about Barry Goldwater. He was a man of high morals and just a hell of a guy. I never knew him, but everybody I've talked to that does says that he was a hell of a guy. Hey, you know, you're a reporter, see? And you write for a big website, and you get a chance to be on TV a lot, and you're offered the opportunity, or you get the opportunity to interview the President of the United States. And your name is Mike Allen, and you're with that Politico.com. You see him on TV quite a lot, kind of a nerdy little guy. And so you get an interview with the President of the United States. And knowing that this administration has been one of controversy, upheaval, immorality, criminality, just about anything you can imagine, there's been no lack of news during this administration. If there's ever been a president that you wanted to sit down and talk to and had a million questions for because of all the crap that's going on during his administration, this would be the one. And so you could go in and play a little hardball with this guy. Hell, you don't need access to him next year anyway. He's not going to be around. So why not go in and lay the wood to him, huh? Why not go in and ask him some really probing questions that all of us would love to hear the answers to? So Mike Allen, weasel that he is, goes in and sits down with the President of the United States, and here's some of his questions. Have you seen this interview yet? Mr. President, I know you're going to hate this, but I'm hoping that we may twist your arm and talk about baseball for a moment. And there's laughter. Mr. President, you're a Major League Baseball team owner. Everyone is a free agent. You have a Yankees-like wallet. Who's your first position player? Who's your pitcher? Like any of us would give a damn about the answer for that. And then Allen goes back with a really tough question. Now, Mr. President, You and the First Lady appeared on American Idol's charity show, Idol Gives Back, and I wonder, who do you think is going to win? Saisha, David Cook, or David Archuleta? Yeah, he's really hammering him, really a lot. All right, Mr. President, who does the better impression, Will Ferrell of you or Dana Carvey of your father? Man, he's getting right to the meat of the issues here, isn't he? And this one, I saw the video of this one. And speaking of impressions, our friend Robert Draper, author of Dead Certain, said you do a great impression of Dr. Evil from Austin Powers, and Junior does it for him. The most lame, pathetic interview I've ever seen with a public personality. Mike Allen, you're a disgrace to journalism. You really are. And of course, you know, he was there kissing Junior's ass, asking him these softball questions. I'll just bet Junior went up to Laura up in the presidential living quarters upstairs. But you know that Mike Allen, he's a nice guy. He didn't ask me any tough questions. He was a really nice guy. Yeah. Well, I ran across some audio that I'm not sure many of you have heard. Maybe you have. But we've talked a lot about, in the past week or so, about the Defense Department, or our Department of War, getting all these ex-military people to go out and act as political analysts and do a hell of a propaganda campaign on the American people, spreading whatever it is the Pentagon wanted spread, calling them into little meetings and telling them what they wanted said. Here's what we're promoting. This is the flavor of the week, the blue plate special of the day. And so they were all over MSNBC and CNN and ABC, CBS, NBC, all the networks, Fox, spreading this propaganda. And, of course, the networks, with the exception of PBS, has been mum about the whole thing. They don't want to talk about it. Well, I want to talk about it some more. And one of the ways I want to talk about it some more is to play you this audio that Donnie Rumsfeld and the invitees to one of these propaganda meetings thought was off the record. Now, this goes on for several minutes, 7 or 8 minutes, I think, and you're going to hear some clinking and clacking and all that because they're eating dinner at the Pentagon. So you'll hear the silverware and the glasses clinking and the plates and all that. It's not the greatest audio I ever heard, but remember, they're chowing down here, and they're having a big hee-haw and a big discussion about how they're going to pull the wool over on the American people's eyes here. And I think, of course, Rummy is the center of attention at that time, and they're all talking to him like, oh, Mr. Secretary, you're the man. All of them had a hell of a lot more military experience than Donald Rumsfeld. All of them knew a whole lot more about the situation than Donald Rumsfeld, no doubt. And yet they're all, you know, sucking up like they do. Oh, Mr. Secretary. So listen closely to this. The audio's up and down a little bit on it, but this is how these meetings go. This is something that was off the record that they didn't know was off the record, and there's about 6 or 7 segments to it. You'll tell when you'll be able to see when they're divided. I could stop and make a comment or two in between, but I will not. I'll just play them, and so that you'll get a feel for how these guys talked about the Iraq situation amongst themselves when they knew we weren't listening.
You folks have been so steady in your interest and your willingness to invest time and talk to the folks here.
Donald Rumsfeld talking.
Hear what they have to say, and then if we are in a period of irregular and asymmetric warfare, we can't lose militarily, but we can't win by military means alone, which means you have to have these other capabilities. The government of the United States is not arranged that way. The international institutions are not arranged that way. And we simply have to get farther down the road in terms of that ability. because we aren't going to be around the world for the numbers of years it took Algeria, for example, to subdue an insurgency. We're just not going to do that.
This is really off the record. But do you think that this government can survive the unity government, or they're going to eventually have to go to an authoritarian one like, you know, we came out of Korea, Sigmund Rhee was really sure an authoritarian leader.
Mm-hmm.
In the 11 years I was supporting Commander in Korea, the president was an Army Major General in civilian clothes.
Right.
They had their highest growth rates. They did the 88 Olympics, and they finally handed it over.
Yep.
So the real question is, and we all hope the unity government could
right.
have done it, but it's very difficult.
It is very difficult. I mean, you know, you look at it, and there isn't anyone smart enough to know the answer to your question.
I think the answer is they can't, but how do you get that yeah. right person?
Malawi had steel up his backside.
Right. He was the man.
And he wasn't well-liked and wasn't perfect. He'd leave the country for long periods and stuff. He was not as attentive as he needed to be, it strikes me. But good Lord, in terms of dealing with him, he was terrific. He'd make a decision, and he'd kick some fanny to get it implemented, and you felt good about it. The fellow who preceded Maliki was like a windsock. You know, he was the last guy he talked to. And we're still off the record.
We heard that windsock terminology over there.
Oh, man.
From somebody else.
Yeah, he's a hell of a, you know, very pleasant guy, but good grief, the last guy he talked to. And this fellow's better than the one before, but he's not Sigmund Rhee.
Mr. Secretary, could you go back to one of the things you said in terms of the malign influence of Syria and Iran? Lee Hamilton said on a couple of the Sunday morning talk shows that the road to peace begins and ends in Baghdad. And he kind of looks at the road to peace as a traffic circle around the Green Zone.
Hmm.
How do we get through?
He should be in the media.
He's not that low yet, sir. He may be working on it. But seriously, in terms of how do we convince people that we have to have a solution which is going to be designed around the idea of ending state sponsorship of terror in the region?
Yeah.
How do we get there?
I wish I knew. It's very clear that this conflict, probably, in my view, is still not well understood. It's complicated. It's unfamiliar. There's no roadmap. There's no experience. It doesn't have anything to do with World War II and capturing Iwo Jima, and when it's over, you own the island. But it just isn't the nature of it. People keep talking about going after the militias as though that they exist in a form, in a location where you can attack them, destroy them, and then that's done. They don't exist, or they're captured. And of course, our guys go into militia into that territory, and these folks disappear. And they don't want to fight. And you leave, and they're back. So it is a very different circumstance. And obviously, they know it. They know that the center of gravity of the thing is here in the United States. It isn't out there. And that they're designing their attacks to have maximum effect politically, to weaken the will of the American people.
Keep in mind, this is Donald Rumsfeld and the invited attendees of a Pentagon luncheon with some of these lackeys that went out and spread the gospel for the Pentagon, the propaganda. The really good part of this is coming up, but it gives you an idea into how these guys, how flippantly they think about some of this this entire matter, especially Rumsfeld.
Doing a pretty good job, hell of a lot more skillful at it than we are. And the case can be made that to some extent what's happening in Iraq is playing out a microcosm of what's happening in the region in terms of this Sunni Shia divide. And it is, I have personally felt for several years now that I wish there were some way that we could keep Iraq and Afghanistan and even Lebanon to some extent in the broader context of the struggle that's taking place within that faith between the violent extremists and the mainstream Muslims.
Mr. Secretary, we've got a guy you know very well, this Sadr, who came from virtually nowhere to become a player.
Yeah.
In your opinion, what if lightning were to strike today and this guy was no longer on the scene? Would that make a difference?
I thought you had a glass of champagne.
We can do this.
You're talking to Wayne.
I would do that for Obama. I mean, I've seen people grow over time in conflict. And I don't know that I've ever seen anyone grow in a conflict and gain so much strength and apparently so much power over such a short period of time, and also be such a linchpin and possibly reversing some things, even on a short term.
That's right. No, you're right. This guy, you know, what was he, a 30-year-old thug who was indicted for a murder.
And a lousy cleric.
And not a real cleric. He's not well-respected. Sistani has, of course, all the respect and is kind of a senior religious figure in the country. I understood she is. And he doesn't like him. Sistani doesn't like him. He opposes what he does. He, at the present time, has A, survived, and B, does not have perfect control over the Sadr elements, JAM and his old army. They're factions. Some of them are not listening to him or doing what he wants. He's kind of a mugwump at the moment. He's being enticed into the political process and wondering if he can go legit. In which case he's losing some of his supporters. He clearly is not a military force in the country. He's a demonstrator and a death squad. Pardon me?
Agitator.
Yeah, an agitator. He could stop something from happening in the parliament, and he's got some votes. But he's a danger, and they're going to have to do something about it.
And I guess hands off the record clearly is, why is the guy still even around? I find that.
Remember when Sharon went to meet with Al Haig and he walked out thinking he'd gotten a wink and a nod? I don't want you to think you got one from me.
Tom shows up at my house.
You get a call. Send me my bottle.
Oh, man. I'm out of here.
But politically, what do those challenges turn into? You're not going to have a lot of sympathetic ears up there.
Until it happens.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I mean, this president's pretty much a victim of success. We haven't had an attack here in 5 years. Help. The perception of the threat is so low in the society that it's not surprising that the behavior pattern reflects a low threat assessment. And the same thing is in Europe. There's a low threat perception. The correction for that, I suppose, is an attack. And when that happens, then everyone gets energized for another period. And it's a shame. We don't have...
When that happens, everyone gets energized. The solution for the problem is for the support for the war is that we haven't had another attack, and when that happens, everyone will get energized. Would that every American could hear that statement from Donald Rumsfeld. He is reiterating the thoughts, the wishes, probably the hopes and prayers of the Bush administration. Knowing that, and this is something we have to be very careful about this year, knowing that another attack, the American people would fall right back into the same trap they fell in leading up to the Iraq War. That bloodlust, that frenzy they whipped the American people into for wanting some revenge. The American people fell right into their plan, fell right into their trap, into their web. It's exactly what they were hoping would happen, and it did. Their excuse came up. And I think that's something that we need to be ever vigilant about this year. It worries me some. I don't want to think that there are people in our government like that. I don't want to think that there are people in our government that think that way. But the trouble is, after hearing that, and after hearing about other things that have happened in these last 7.5 years, I must believe that there are people like that in our government. I must believe that there are people like that in positions of leadership in this government. I must believe that there are truly many conservatives without conscience in the Bush administration. What other choice do I have? When the truth is laid right in front of your face, when you hear this group of men, and the reason that they were there was that they were there to sit and have a lunch and plan and plot on how to fool the American public into going along with this illegal, immoral war. When you know that there are people like that in the government, sanctioned by the president himself and the vice president himself, with their blessing, carrying on a program like this with the attitude they have, it's just crushing. It's unthinkable. And I don't know how many of you are my age, but when I was, I've always said, I'm lucky that I was raised when I was and where I was in this country. I'm a country boy, and when I was being brought up, yes, the Cold War was going on, but the love for this country, the respect for this country, we knew that we were literally, we thought we were invincible. We were the greatest, most powerful, most moral, ethical, good country on this planet. That's the way I was raised. That's how I was raised. That's what I was going to believe. It's what I did believe. And that's why it hurts. It hurts as an American to hear this recording of these men flippantly sitting around talking about, well, you know, we don't have a lot of support for the war, but we, you know, if we have another attack, we will. Almost saying that wistfully. Do I believe that there are people in this Bush administration that maybe consciously or subconsciously think that would be a good thing in this election year? Do I believe that? Sadly, yes, I do. I hope that doesn't sound extreme or radical, but what choice do I have after hearing that? Knowing all that we know about the Bush administration and the people that have been in it, the Rumsfeld and the Cheneys and the Wolfowitzes and the Pearls and the Douglas Feiths and all these people, what choice do we have but to think But to believe that they would sit around and wish for something like that in order to keep power. What choice do we have? It sickens me as an American. It sickens me as somebody that's loved this country always. It sickens me as somebody that was brought up the way I was. I didn't serve in the military. My father did during the Second World War. Always been a proud American. But I'm not so proud right now. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a rumor. It's not anything they can run from. There it is. And every last man that was at that meeting, and I have the list, every last one of them is guilty of crimes against America. Every last one of them is guilty of propagandizing the American people so that they'll back this war. It's shameful for a group of men that have worn the uniform of the United States of America and have been high-ranking, every single one of them high-ranking. I will, when the program's over, get you the link for where all that came from today. Have it here somewhere. Just can't get to it right at the moment, but I'll put the link up on the chat room for those of you that would like to have that. It's in six or seven different segments, and of course I just put them all together. It was lengthy, but I thought you'd enjoy hearing it because it's very sobering. We read this and we read that, but when you hear it coming out of their mouths, and when you hear them sitting there having the big old ha-ha-ha about that, very sobering. Well, as I mentioned, after the show, I will get that up on the chat room for you today. That link, I'll have to hunt for it here for just a minute, but I'll get it for you. I had so much to talk about today. I wanted to talk about John McCain quite a lot today, but I didn't get to. I guess we'll have to let that wait because, of course, that's something that'll simmer on the old stove for a few days, huh? What we have to say about John McCain. Of course, we know that he agreed with Junior Bush's words today. He didn't disavow them. He agreed with them. And we're all collaborators with the enemy as far as he's concerned, and we're going to we know now that they're going to run on terror once again. They're going to run on fear once again, and they will run on race as well. We're starting to see every evidence of that. So all the material that we had to talk about John McCain today, it'll wait for another day because it's not going to go away. No, John, what we have to say about you is not going to go away. All the baggage that you're carrying, you're going to carry all the way through your campaign, and we'll make sure everybody knows about every last bag of it. I do want to thank everybody for listening to the program today. I enjoyed very much talking to John Dean again today. Delightful man, a very insightful man. And I hope you will borrow it, get to the library when it comes in, or whatever, Pure Goldwater, his new book. I think you'll want to read it, and I think you'll learn quite a lot about it. About Barry Goldwater and what a real conservative was about. I wanted to talk some more about Rod Parsley today, but that will wait as well. My, do I have a dossier on Rod Parsley. Is that fair to talk about somebody's minister? Well, gosh, I didn't make the rules. Somebody else did. So I guess we'll be doing that come next week. We've got a couple of days' worth of stuff to talk about on Mr. Parsley and his great relationship with Mr. McBush, McCain, whatever he's John Sidney McCain III. We'll have lots to talk about next week on that. So I do want to thank all of you for joining us this week. It's been a good week for me, and I hope it was good for me. Was it good for you? Thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Don't forget, we are a listener-supported program, and we could use your assistance right now. I know everybody's out raising money, but it's that time of year, and we need to as well. So thanks for listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.